In the field of social psychology, there's this idea of what's known as the halo effect, and as you may know, it's generally attributing more positive, desirable qualities to people who tend to look better. This idea has been coined the beauty is good hypothesis, where anything that's beautiful is attributed to being good, and anything that's not beautiful or ugly, basically, that's what the literature says, is attributed as being undesirable or evil. For instance, look at the depiction of the orcs in Lord of the Rings. They're evil, they're the bad guys, they're the antagonists, and they're depicted as being quite unattractive. I mean, they're orcs. So in today's podcast episode, we're going to be looking at what's known as the beauty is good stereotype, as I mentioned, and how that influences your social outcomes and how people perceive you based on your physical looks alone. For this, we're going to be looking at a paper by Christoph Klebb and colleagues from the University of Melbourne. So firstly, we have to ask the question, why do we do what we do? Why do we make immediate judgments of a person's character, or their moral character more importantly, based on seemingly unrelated information? So for instance, I see somebody's physical attractiveness or their physical look overall, and I make judgments on their religiosity or their religiousness. I make judgments on their moral character. I make judgments on how good they are as a parent, and so on and so forth. And all of this has been seen in the literature. So why do we make these very drastic connections between seemingly irrelevant information? Well, part of that answer, as we find in social psychology, is because stereotyping is effective. We stereotype because it helps us compartmentalize people into very quick groups. It helps us understand or make inference guesses based on other people we've met in the past. So it could be that I've met a very disheveled looking, an unattractive person, just let's put it that way, and they were rude and arrogant, perhaps because they got a bad hand at life, and so they're just bitter people now. And so understandably, when I meet somebody who looks just like that or fits that bill, in the future, I can also stereotype that he or she may also be like my previous experience with a similar looking person. That is an obvious example of a stereotype, but the beauty is good is also a stereotype. So this idea that being attractive means you're a great person, you can do no harm, you're just a stand-up person overall, well, that is also an example of a halo effect. So think of it as like an umbrella. There's the halo effect at the top, and then the beauty is good stereotype is underneath it as one of the branches of this so-called halo effect. Now, the halo effect can affect our lives in many different ways, from a teacher's perception of a student's intelligence, depending on their attractiveness, from a job likelihood of getting a promotion, depending on your attractiveness, from your outcomes in a criminal trial setting, depending on your attractiveness, depending on even the prosecutor's attractiveness. If it's a very handsome prosecutor, then there is a very real risk of the jury being swayed in his or her favor based on just those looks alone. And this is a very subtle bias that's been seen in applied forensic science. These implicit biases that you see in the courtroom are very difficult to control, and so there are multiple, let's just say, safeguards or processes that are used to try to limit the confounding effect of beauty in the courtroom, although they'll never explicitly say, that man's too handsome, we can't have him in the courtroom. This is such a silly example, I've gone off tangent so much, but yeah, essentially you can't just say, that guy's too attractive, we can't have him as a prosecutor, he's going to influence the jury too much. But there are things, especially in the American court system, where you can have unlimited jury passes, or virtually unlimited, and so if the defendant's lawyer, it feels like the prosecutor is going to somehow influence the jury too much, perhaps just by looks, then I remember a funny case where there was a very attractive prosecutor, and so they tended to get more male jurors than female ones because they felt that the female jurors would be more easily swayed by the attractiveness and handsomeness and charisma of the prosecutor in delivering his point. So looks do matter, and it matters a lot in the courtroom too. Now, while the beauty is good stereotype is fine and dandy, it doesn't really explain how we see beauty and goodness as a word. Think of it this way. Do we see a beautiful person as being morally pure? So in the idea of purity, because realistically, from other studies that the literature has looked at in the past, for example, Graham et al. 2009, unattractive people are seen as impure and attractive people are seen as pure. So these words of purity are very important in determining this beauty is good stereotype. Why am I making such a big deal of these words? Because this is exactly how the idea of beauty as good is perceived. I'll give you an example. So a person who is seen as unattractive is more likely, or we think that they're more likely, to engage in what's known as purity violations. An example would then be spitting on the ground in public, not wearing deodorant, or just having a lack of general hygiene, being rude and belligerent in public spaces, like on the train. So these are examples of purity violations, and we tend to associate those to be more likely to occur with unattractive individuals. So for the sake of, let's go back to our beginning thesis of the idea that we make these stereotypes for our own protection in split second decisions. So we see a person and we make an instant decision just based on everything we see in like half a millisecond. Not really half, I think it's more like 11 milliseconds off the top of my head. But we make these decisions for our own protection, because if you can imagine, you're on the train but with somebody who's being rude and belligerent, then you probably want to avoid them. And if they fit that bill of that person you think might be rude and belligerent, let's just say for whatever reason you think they're unattractive, you're going to avoid them because you feel like they may put your, not necessarily your life at risk, but they may put your peace of mind at risk. So this fixation with beauty is not necessarily life and death, as the previous literature, I'm talking like pre-2015, would make it out to be, but it's more so for your peace of mind and just general comfort in a social setting. So when you're with other people, you want to flock towards more attractive people because you think they're going to behave better in a social setting. What's really interesting, however, is that from Goodwin et al. 2014, the significance of somebody's moral character is much more important than their competence-related character. So for example, your physical warmth or, tactfulness, your social ability is less important than your moral outlook on things, which is what the beauty is good stereotype is being used to determine. It does make sense from an intuitive point of view why morals are the most important thing that we look for in another person, especially a stranger. Think of it this way, you're sitting on a train and you left behind $10. If you've assumed that the person sitting next to you is of good moral character, then it's illogical that you expect them to give the money back, which is probably why, very subconsciously, you sat next to them in the first place. You expect them to have supposedly good moral character. Another example would be, you feel safer sitting next to a family of four, I suppose, with mom, dad, happy children. You feel safer sitting next to, a mother and her children. They all look very happy. You feel safer sitting next to a grandma. You feel safer sitting next to a religious clergyman, an imam, a rabbi, whatever, because you assume they're of better moral character than someone who looks deformed, looks unattractive, looks disheveled, looks unhygienic, looks like a junkie, looks very shifty or dodgy. The list goes on and on. However, for attractive people, the scales of moral character are actually shifted in their favor, which is hardly surprising. From Wilson and Eccles' 2006 paper, they found that attractive individuals are perceived as more trustworthy and can earn more in the first stage of a trust-based game than an unattractive individual. You can meet a person, and if they're attractive, you instantly are drawn towards them. And for that reason, whatever they say, you just take it at face value. You don't question it. They say, oh, I'm a pilot and I do this, this, and this. You take it at face value because generally more attractive people tend to get those higher paying jobs. That's just what the research says. Generally, more attractive people tend to get better life outcomes. So that's just what the research says. And so from those attributions, you have no reason to suspect that an attractive person would be lying to you, because why would they? They could very well do all of those things if they wanted to, or so that's what you think. They found this same attractiveness, trustworthiness bias, I suppose we'll just name it that, from Zhu et al.'s paper 2015, and they saw this in children as young as 8 years of age. And Harris et al. 2014 saw that children trust information provided by an attractive person to a greater extent than information provided by an unattractive person. From neuroimaging studies such as Haselman et al. 2020, they saw that the regions related to facial attraction, or determining that, and your ideas of moral acts and religiosity were very close to each other, and so there's a common neural network between those two regions. The idea of beauty being linked to goodness has also been seen many times in philosophy, where Immanuel Kant, almost 200 years ago, claimed that beauty is a symbol of morality. So the beauty is good stereotype is nothing new, but what hasn't been really explored is how this relates to morality and the idea of morally provoking events. Essentially, we've even seen it in the idea of karma, where if you do bad in this life, you'll be reincarnated as an unattractive person. I know that's an actual folklore that I've heard being told to children. And so the idea of purity, impurity, beauty, being close to goodness is something that's been ingrained within us for almost 2,000-3,000 years. It's found everywhere you go. One such evolutionary reason for why it's so prevalent in our history is because the words of purity and impurity are somewhat linked to pathogen and pathogen health. It's only within the last 100 years we've actually had modern medicine that can cure pathogens. But before then, if you caught something that was incurable, which was the vast majority of diseases, almost all of them, you just had to die or hope that your immune system was strong enough to somehow fight it off. So this idea that an unattractive person is somewhat linked to poor pathogen health, in other words, that they're carrying some kind of a disease. A good example would be acne, which is very visible on your facial features because it's acne, and it's caused by a bacterial infection, acne vulgaris. So the idea would be that I would avoid that person because A, they're unattractive, and the acne is what's making them unattractive, but also B, because they're carrying a disease, so they're a vector for disease, which I don't want to catch, because if I catch it, I might die. I might just very well die. A more serious example would be probably leprosy. I don't know if you guys have seen leprosy, but it's quite visible and it's horrible. It really is. But similarly, it provides a heuristic clue, an indicator on your physical outer appearance for people to avoid you, like a very red big stop signal telling people stay away from me. If I were to guess where the words of purity and goodness, where this idea comes from, if we think back to history, a lot of the time we assume that impurity was associated with pathogens. Think of malaria, where the Romans assumed that malaria basically came from swamps and foul smells. But as we know now, obviously it's not the swamp or the foul smells that are causing malaria. They're just a breeding ground for the mosquito larvae, which are the actual vectors of malaria. Another example would be in Florence, Italy, where they believed that cholera was being caused by bad smells, foul smells. And so this idea persisted until Filippo Puccini in 1854 found actual germ cells of cholera and realized this is a pathogen infection just like any other. These two theories follow what's known as the theory of miasma, or miasma, is the idea that noxious smells or bad smells are what's causing actual diseases because they're attributed with whenever a disease outbreak occurs. So hopefully by now you can see how this idea is starting to form. As humans, we're very disease averse, and so we stay away from things that may indicate pathogens or being a pathogen vector. This includes heuristic indicators such as skin blemishes, lesions, for instance, acne and leprosy, but then also lesser things such as uncleanliness, which is again linked to the theory of miasma. Obviously, that's an obsolete theory. It's not true, but it's so hardwired into us that these bad, foul, unhygienic practices lead to morally corrupt behavior, and more importantly, disease is just inescapable at this point. So what does this have to do with physical attractiveness? Well, as you may imagine, your physical outer attractiveness is influenced by disease. So if you're diseased, you're going to be very significantly disadvantaged in your actual physical appearance and the positive perceptions of how others see you. Diseases are just one very visual example, but there are also many lifestyle factors that are also quite influential. For instance, your mother could have been a heavy alcohol drinker, and so you develop fetal alcohol syndrome, and your face takes on a very characteristic shape. That would be classified as unattractive. Your genes may be predisposed to Down syndrome, and so your children develop Down syndrome. Whether you like it or not, that will very greatly limit their reproductive choices, because their genes show a very obvious anomaly, and so most people would classify that as unattractive. It may seem like a very politically incorrect, insensitive, or very ableist thing to say, but you can ask any one of those examples if you know somebody in real life how their day-to-day experiences are, and I can guarantee you that they face some kind of discrimination, whether it be in the dating, job, or other type of market. So all of these things could fall into the disease avoidance system that humans have hardwired into them. And the reason why it's so aggressive, or more correctly, it's over-inclusive, is because it's far more risky to have a false negative, meaning that you interact with someone who you thought didn't have a disease, but they actually did, and they spread it to you, and now you die, than it is to have a false positive, where you assume that they have the disease, but they don't. And so you just go on and find another 1 in a 7 billion person. There's heaps of people, so there's no shortage there. As a result, people perceive unattractive people, particularly those with facial disfigurement, as impure and experience disgust towards them, as found by Greenway et al. 2020, Park et al. 2013, Ryan et al. 2012, and Tapp et al. 2020, as cited by Christoph Klebb et al. In the paper that we've been looking at today. So while this is great, it doesn't exactly explain the link between moral impurity and pathogens, because you can be a great person and you can also carry diseases, or you can be a horrible person and not carry any diseases. Well, part of that has to do with cognitive dissonance. Being sexually promiscuous is fun and all, but it also has a risk of spreading diseases, pathogens, the very pathogens that humans are averse to. So on one hand, we have our own desires, and on the other, we have the need or the responsibility to protect the greater community. So we moralize certain acts as either being good or bad. An example would be being sexually promiscuous is being moralized as being an impure act committed by wicked or corrupt people. Another would be failing to wash your hands after using the bathroom. Only impure people would do that. It has been argued that purity intuitions present an innate domain underpinning of moral judgment. What this means is that people often morally condemn others who commit purity violations, even if the act is only directed at the person themselves and do not directly cause harm to another. An example would be condemning a non-normative but harmless sexual practice, such as having an orgy, I suppose, or the consumption of a prohibited food, like a steak made from human muscle cells, seem to be condemned to being morally impure or corrupt things that only a corrupt person would do. There is a dissonance between condemning harmful acts, things that can actually cause physical harm to other people, for example, burning someone's arm, poking them in the eye, cutting their cheek with a razor, versus impure acts, or things that are just generally quite disgusting, like licking someone's shoes or pouring urine on yourself, picking up dog poop barehanded, any one of those examples. And so we assume that more unattractive people would be more likely to commit those impure violations than an attractive person. Conversely, this also somewhat implies that more attractive people are more likely to commit the harmful acts versus the impure acts, but that's not really a fair comparison because we're only giving them two options. I guess if you gave them an option of they would do nothing, then we would expect to see that the attractive people would be expected to do none of those bad things because they're attractive. Why would an attractive person step in dog poop? That's ridiculous. Attractive people don't do that. Obviously, I'm being facetious. Attractive people are just as likely to commit any type of impure act as an unattractive person. It's just our perceptions on what we expect people to do are very heavily influenced by looks and aesthetics. Unsurprisingly, as the study found, unattractive individuals are perceived to be more impure. Impurity is linked to moral violations because they can spread pathogens, and so you're a morally corrupt person for spreading pathogens to the greater community. You're putting yourself above others, and so for that reason, you're a morally corrupt person. So that's where the link is being drawn from. What's even worse, however, if you're an unattractive person, that is, the directionality of this effect isn't exactly equal. As Griffin et al. 2006 found, it is more disadvantageous to be unattractive than it is advantageous to be attractive. In other words, due to this over-inclusiveness of human disgust towards unattractive things like pathogens and diseases and unhygienic people, it is much worse to be perceived as unattractive and thus unhygienic and thus a contamination risk than it is to be perceived as attractive and clean. As I somewhat hinted at earlier, it's not unattractiveness that's driving this effect of impurity. It's rather that we assume attractive people wouldn't do harmful things or impure things as a whole. So given the choice between one or the other, attractive people would be guessed to do the harmful thing rather than the impure thing, because attractive people, for whatever reason, would just never do disgusting things. They can do harmful things, but not disgusting ones. That's just the implication. And I can see where it comes from. I've definitely met people who think like that. But if you gave them a choice, and I'm just hypothesizing here, between would an attractive person do none of those impure or harmful things? Would they do a harmful thing or would they do a impure thing? Obviously, people would more likely choose none of those things because they see attractive people as being beyond those lesser things, if that makes sense. Claire Bettel's paper, the paper we're looking at today, actually studied this in their third study and found that there was no significant effect of attractiveness on the perceived likelihood to engage in a harmful act but there was a significant effect of attractiveness to engage in an impure act. So in other words, attractive people, given the choice, would not be seen to be more likely to commit harmful things, because again, why would they? But for whatever reason, we see unattractive people to be more likely to commit impure things, such as stepping in vomit and licking someone's shoes and some other disgusting scenarios, as they pointed out. From these results, it's very clear to see how unattractiveness, rather than attractiveness, biases one's moral character, because moral character is being built on this foundation of purity versus impurity. And so if we assume that a person is deliberately trying to contaminate people and just doing unclean things, impure things, then it's very easy to see how this is contributing to our perception of their low moral character. This doesn't necessarily mean that we see attractive people as being of higher moral character. It's just by comparison to unattractive people, they don't have this negative stereotype attached to them, and so they're just higher just by not having that stereotype. So they're higher by default. Just to give you a better indication of the study, I'll read through some of the harmful acts that they used. One example would be grabbing someone's arm very hard. You can imagine that's harmful, that's causing physical harm. Pulling someone's hair, calling someone incompetent, emotional harm. Pinching someone's arm, joking about an incident that happened to someone else, laughing about someone else's clothes. All of this are like mean girls stuff versus some kind of physical harm on that spectrum. Whereas the impure acts are just very disgusting things like tasting your own earwax, sniffing your armpits indiscreetly, spitting on the street, picking up dog poop barehanded, clipping their nails in the tram, spitting on the floor at home, eating food with mold on it. So I'm not surprised that these results are the way that they are. If you look at just about any movie trope, the unattractive person is seen doing one of these things in some way or another. It's a very deliberately enforced movie trope, even in just general pop culture. Let's go to the example of Heathers, if you've seen the movie, where Martha Dumptruck in the flesh, if you see, the song stuck in my head now. But if you remember back to the cafeteria scene, Martha, who's quite heavy set, larger girl, high school student, and essentially she's seen doing something disgusting, and so they make fun of her, the mean girls, the popular girls. And so this is a very common trait. We tend to associate, for whatever reason, unattractive people to be doing unattractive things, like eating moldy food or sniffing your armpits indiscreetly, but never anything deliberately harmful, because we see these characters, and I'm talking about it from a movie trope perspective, a cliche perspective. You never expect these unattractive lesser characters to be the main antagonist or the protagonist. The protagonist and the antagonist is just a battle between two attractive main characters battling it out. And so you expect them to be doing harmful acts against one another, but the unattractive side characters are just trying to get by in their own lives. And to really sell that character trope, they portray them doing unattractive things. I feel like disgusting is too strong of a word to describe what I'm trying to say. So what is the takeaway from all of this? Well, firstly, the attributions we have towards one's moral character is not uniformly distributed. In other words, it's very heavily biased towards their reactions to impurity and purity, so the purity domain, basically. Moral character can mean so many things. It can mean religiosity, it can mean generosity, it can mean your outlook on people less fortunate than you, it can mean your aversion to doing immoral things. And so we have to define what we actually mean by the moral domain. In this case, we're looking at the ideas of purity. And so attractiveness is actually more linked to your ideas of purity versus impurity, rather than saying, for example, an attractive person must be very closely linked to God, which we would attribute as having high religiosity, but that's not exactly what we're looking at. The ideas of impurity and purity, the purity domain, come from the human disease avoidance system, which we have seen in the past in many different papers to be more over-inclusive than under-inclusive for a range of genetic or physiological or lifestyle-based weaknesses. This is done so because it's only been within the last 50 or so years we've had actual modern medicine that can cure most diseases. And so before then, if you got a disease, you might as well be dead. And so the risk of a false negative is far greater than the risk of a false positive, because a false negative means that you're very likely to catch the disease when you expect them to not have the disease. So for this reason, the idea of morality is linked to purity, because we expect morally corrupt people to be doing impure things that puts their own needs above those of the greater community. For instance, not washing your hands when you go to the bathroom, because it may save you like 10-20 seconds, but you're going to be putting the greater community at risk. Especially now in a COVID pandemic, this is a great example of what I'm talking about. Go on the train and see how many people sit next to people not wearing masks versus those who do wear masks. A lot of the heuristic cues for disease can actually be seen on the face, and so this relates back to the ideas of facial attractiveness and aesthetics. To recap, we've gone from impurity to morality, because being impure is a moral health risk to everyone, and some supposed signs of a quote-unquote impure person is seen on the face, and so this links again to facial aesthetics. So we have a triangle of the trifecta of these three factors. People tend to seek to minimize infection risk through moralizing behaviors that increase contamination threat. For example, sexual promiscuity. It's not necessarily a harmful thing. Being sexually promiscuous is something that can be controlled, or the transmission of sexually transmitted diseases is what I'm referring to. And so we try to moralize that by saying it's a immoral thing to control the spread of diseases, even though nowadays it's not as relevant anymore because the disease can be controlled, but there are still some very powerful new diseases occurring through sexual transmission, which are antibiotic resistant. So there is still a threat to the greater community, and so that's why we moralize certain behaviors. Expecting unattractive individuals to engage in impure violations, so doing those impure, uncleanly things, may provide a moral justification for the stigmatization of an unattractive individual, helping to explain the persistence of this bias in social information processing. What this essentially means is that there's a type of cognitive dissonance going on. Deep down, we feel bad for deliberately avoiding unattractive people, but then at the same time, we justify it to ourselves as saying, oh, there must have been impure people, or look what they're doing, that's why I avoided them. They're picking their nose, that's why I avoided them. It's not because they're unattractive, nothing to do with their looks, it's because he's picking his nose. That's obviously impure behavior. He can get me sick. Previous research by Klebb and colleagues in 2020 found that attractive faces elicit purity intuitions, and these purity intuitions are what's influencing moral judgments. So this is from Schnell et al. 2008, and essentially we see an attractive face as doing no wrong, and so we expect them to make the right moral judgments. And again, if you remember back to that very first example I gave of you leaving $10 note behind on the train, you expect the attractive individual to give that money back, whereas the unattractive individual to perhaps not give it back. Alright, so that's the end of this podcast episode. I hope you've enjoyed talking about the ideas of moral purity, impurity, the disease aversion mechanism, and the halo effect, which is very significant in all of our lives, and I think we have an obligation as critical thinkers to be aware of how it influences our decision making when we're interacting with more attractive and less attractive people. What's significant to me from all of the research is that it is far worse to be unattractive than it is beneficial to be attractive. So I guess if you're unattractive, do what you can to improve. There are definitely ways, and modern medicine has changed a whole lot. Obviously, we have the Coos Report and our consultants who can help you know what to change, but regardless, it is much worse to be unattractive because human biases are over-inclusive, and so we really don't want to be associated with unattractive people because there is a heavy stigma towards it, and we try to justify this cognitive dissonance by telling ourselves that these unattractive people must be doing impure things, or they must be morally corrupt people. And so, in general, it is far worse to be unattractive, and this is what they mean by that.